what happens to intellectually disabled people if medical care is rationed because of the coronavirus? Are they put at the end of the list or perhaps the front? Phoenix author and journalist Amy Silverman wrote about this for the Arizona Daily Star as part of a local reporting project for ProPublica. She spoke with our co-host Steve Goldstein, and they began by talking about the general concerns for people with intellectual disabilities right now and how they would be treated in case of this kind of pandemic.
Well, I think it's always a concern because this is a vulnerable population, a population that can't always speak up for itself. And when you think about what happens in a crisis, you do worry about the most vulnerable populations. And there's been a lot of discussion about people in nursing homes and assisted living facilities who are older, but not as much about people with intellectual disabilities.
So you looked at what policies are on the books at this point, and one that really stood out was Alabama.
Each state apparently has its own preparedness disaster plan. I spent a lot of last week reading disaster plans. Alabama's plan was particularly specific when it came to the use of ventilators. I'm going to quote from it. Part of it says that, quote, persons with severe mental retardation, advanced dementia, or severe traumatic brain injury may be poor candidates for ventilator support. And another part says that, quote, persons with severe or profound mental retardation, moderate to severe dementia, or catastrophic neurological complications such as persistent vegetative state are unlikely candidates for ventilator support. Disability advocates translate into the deprioritization of access to things like ventilators and other care for people with intellectual disabilities. In other words, if a decision had to be made, would a person with an intellectual disability have access to a ventilator? The prioritization may be made based on the intellectual disability rather than the physical condition of the people in question.
Mm. How intense a clash could this potentially be? The phrase I think was used by a couple of the people you interviewed truly stood out. Ruthless utilitarian logic.
Well, honestly, I mean, it comes down to the idea of eugenics. If you really take it to its natural potential conclusion, it could end up being a very severe clash. In fact, my personal opinion is that plans like this wouldn't necessarily get pulled out, right? It would just be more of a very quick, on-the-spot decision-making. And so the idea that it's insidious, that it is on some level kind of woven into our psyche, that people with intellectual disabilities are not as worthy as other people, is really, to me, the bigger issue. Now, the fact that it's actually written into some states' disaster plans is terrifying.
Well, what did you find out about Arizona?
Arizona's and a lot of others don't actually mention intellectual disabilities. Arizona's plan advises medical officials to, quote, allocate resources to patients whose need is greater or whose prognosis is more likely to result in a positive outcome with limited resources. And I spoke to John Myers from the ARC of Arizona about that and said, oh, phew, well, I guess Arizona's in a good spot because we don't single out intellectual disability the way a state like Alabama says. And John's response was a little bit chilling. He says, well, it depends on who's reading that policy and how they're interpreting it. So something that's not mentioned in my story that happened after it was published is that on Saturday, the next day, the head of the Department of Health and Human Services actually did issue a formal statement that's echoed in the quote from him in my story that said that states are not to deprioritize people based on intellectual disability.
Now, when you hear that, does it sound like it rings true?
Well, I think he means it. You know, I mean, he also used the term utilitarianism. But I think that it's something that people need to be aware of because on a practical level, when you come down to a crisis situation, those are the kinds of decisions that are going to be made.
Yeah.
And that I believe are probably already being made in Europe and in other cities that are harder hit so far than Phoenix.
Amy, let me come back to your piece specifically. Emily Wallace, I'd like you to talk a little bit about her and her significance.
Emily Wallace was a 67-year-old woman who had Down syndrome She led a really remarkable life. She lived in Albany, Georgia, which is a small town. She and her husband, Richard, were, if not the first, one of the first couples in the state with intellectual disabilities to marry. He also had Down syndrome. He passed away a couple years ago. And they owned their own home and lived totally independently. And, you know, regardless of what sort of life she led, she still deserved, you know, the right care at the end. And all accounts are that she did receive it. Now, she contracted COVID-19 from a caregiver in a group home where she was living in Albany. One of the people I interviewed said that they can trace it back to two funerals that were held in Albany in late February. That they believe the caregiver who gave it to Emily Wallace contracted it at the funeral. Emily Wallace and another woman in the home both contracted it. Emily passed away. She had a DNR, so there was never an issue of receiving ventilator support.
Well, and even before we get to that step, is there a concern that those with intellectual disabilities will not get as high a priority as far as being tested for COVID-19?
Well, exactly. And that's a concern that the woman who runs the homes, that one of which Emily was in, has as well. She said, you know, but it's hard to tell. And I think this is the kind of thing we're all struggling with. She said it's allergy season in Albany, Georgia right now. Everybody's got a runny nose and runny eyes. And they're sending her people home with Z-Packs and saying, you know, just take care of yourself. And I know we're hearing a lot in Arizona about people not being tested, just simply because of the lack of availability to test. So, but again, you can imagine if there's a limited number of tests, disability advocates are worried about access to that as well for somebody who may be deprioritized. So, yes, it happens at a lot of different levels on the chain of care.
Journalist Amy Silverman wrote her piece about people with intellectual disabilities and coronavirus-related care for the Arizona Daily Star as part of her local reporting project for ProPublica. And you are listening to The Show.